You're listening to Mornings with Gary, the Republican voice of reason. Only on the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network.
All right, so there's a question that I have here. And I just kind of want to piggyback on where we left off last hour. And I want to be clear. I am a Trumper. I can't wait to vote for him. I think we need his policies. Whether you like him personally or not, and I say this all the time. You're not voting for him to be your buddy. You're never going to meet him. And half of the video that you see him, like if you're putting on MSNBC or CNN, and they like to use that footage from years ago, you know, it is edited and it's taken out of context. And if you don't like what he said to Billy Bush on that extra report that he did back in 2016 or whatever it was, 2015, I don't remember. It was around then. I've got news for you. Number one, a lot of guys talk like that. And he didn't know he was being recorded. Not that I'm making excuses for him or justifying what he said, but guys talk like that, okay? And let me tell you something. John F. Kennedy was no prude while in office, while in the White House. Biographers, okay, not a biographer, biographers have long written about escapades that he would have in the White House pool while Jackie was up in their suite there in the White House. Okay. So, come on. Well, I'm not even going to go into Clinton. I swear to God, I had no idea who she was, though. Miss Lewinsky. All right. Good morning. It's Gary Byron. 7-Eleven here on this Monday morning. Welcome aboard the old morning train. Our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair. More or less analyzes politics on the local, the state, and even the national level. He is the president of the Connecticut Young Republicans. Let's welcome back to the show Ken Langill. Ken, good morning.
Morning, Gary. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Pleasure to be back on.
It's always our pleasure here. So let me ask you something. This is a year in which we're voting for a U.S. senator. And we'll talk about, in fact, we just had, as far as I know, the only Republican who has filed papers, anyways, to challenge incumbent Chris Murphy. We had him live in studio last Friday. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But it's also a year that we're electing our congressmen, and we're also electing our state representatives and state senate. So here's my question for you, and I'm curious on your opinion of this. How does Trump, at the top of the ticket, because it's obviously a presidential year in which he's the lead Republican, how does that fare towards the undercard Republican candidates?
Well, it's going to be an interesting push nationally, and there are certain states where he's going to, a rising tide lifts all boats. There are some states where he's going to get an entire Republican ticket elected. Unfortunately, I don't think Connecticut is one of those states. Now, there are certainly towns, there are certainly districts. When you look at the state Senate and state House, you will see go red for Trump and go red across the board. You think of our new state Senate minority leader, Stephen Harding's district, that one tends to favor Republicans. You also think about the Southeast, which has the military base has slowly become much more Republican kind of over the years. But I think in terms of if you're looking at central Connecticut, if you're looking at Southwest Connecticut, Fairfield County, it's going to have a different effect because we've seen this, especially from 2016 on, 2016, I honestly don't think enough people in Connecticut took his campaign seriously, which is, you know, hilarious to think about, because he was, you know, had this great push behind him. And I still think, especially the Democrats in Connecticut and even really kind of across the country, just sort of saw it as a sideshow. And we're like, oh, he's never going to go elected, never get elected. Well, he did. And ever since then, you know, certain pockets of the state of Connecticut have really turned against the Republicans. And a big part of that reason is President Trump on the ballot. Now, like you said, Gary, leading into this, you know, whether you love him, you hate him, it's very clear he has a polarizing effect. And there are certain areas of our state and certain areas of our country where he is beloved. You know, he can do just about anything and still get their vote. But there are other parts of the country, too, where, you know, he could cure cancer and still not get their vote. And unfortunately, there are large pockets of that in Connecticut.
Yeah, you know, I can talk to somebody who says, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the guy, and I'll ask why. And they'll talk about his demeanor, how he carries himself, and the cockiness and the swagger. And I'm like, okay. But that's not what you're voting for. Well, that's part of him. Well, sure. But that's like, you know, saying that I'm not going to go with this brain surgeon who happens to be number one in the country because he's got no bedside manner. And he wasn't all warm and fuzzy when I had the consultation. Okay? I don't care if you're warm and fuzzy. If you're the number one brain guy and you're going to, you know, remove a I'm just using maybe a poor example, but that's the guy I want. I'm not going to marry him, and I'm not going to be his best buddy. He's got a job to do. You know, same thing I would think with the president of the United States. You're not electing him. You're not voting for him for Mr. Congeniality. You're not voting for him to be your best buddy. You're voting for him to get a job done. And right now, we actually, if you think about it, you need somebody tough as nails. You need somebody who maybe is feared in some regard internationally, and somebody that would restore Americanism. And I believe that he is the guy. Now, maybe he isn't the right guy at another period of time, but for the times that we're living in right now, I believe he is the right person. Now, that all being said, a lot of people don't follow politics and are just going to, and there's, he's been branded that no Trump, no Trump. It reminds me of maybe on a smaller level, Ken, where this sounds so minuscule, but, you know, the kid who's bullied in school, you know, and no one's supposed to like him or her, you know, and you're supposed to, and he gets picked on, and the, but for whatever reason, you know, and you don't even know the kid, and you're picking on him. You don't even know what the kid ever did wrong, but he's been branded a loser, you know, and a jerk, and somebody that's nerdy or whatnot, and you're supposed to pick on him. I mean, I never fell into that category. I never jumped on that bandwagon, but sadly, it's you know, picking on and bullying somebody and not liking somebody for the sake of, because everybody else doesn't like that person, has gone on for generations. I think Trump is the victim of that.
Well, you're certainly seeing it, you know, especially in the heavy Democrat states. You know, we've seen the push to remove him from the primary ballot. One of the interesting things that I think Secretary of State Thomas here in Connecticut, you know, she essentially said, hey, you know, I'm not going to remove him from the ballot. You know, if it's going to happen, the courts are going to decide. I think the other side of that decision is, and kind of what she was told behind the scenes was, don't remove him off the ballot because he's our best advertising right now, unfortunately. You know, we've seen it since 2018. And, you know, it goes to, you know, Fairfield County is really the part of the state where you can look at this. And it was a part of the state that was strong Republican, I mean, for decades. And ever since 2018, when this little switch started happening, you know, a little bit at a time, you've seen it, and you've seen sort of this mob mentality take over of, you know, oh, I don't care what he does, I don't care what he says, you know, he's bad. No, vote no, don't vote Trump, vote for whoever else. And you're seeing it be pushed more and more. And that's why you're also seeing, you know, sort of a counterbalance on that, on the other side of that, which is the Trump supporters really doubling down. I mean, the people who support Trump are really, like, you're never getting them out of that corner.
All right, so.
But it's also gotten that way with Biden right now, too.
Well,
and then you're stuck in the middle with all these independents who kind of are like, I don't know which way to go right now. And both sides really aren't doing a great job of being inviting. You know, the left, you know, has pretty much said, hey, if you don't believe everything that we believe in, just get out. And they're forcing a lot of the independents out. And the independents who are going over to the Republican side right now are essentially kind of getting a little bit of the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's concerning because Republicans for a long time, we were always the, you know, we were the big tent party. We were the, hey, we don't have to agree on every single little thing. Let's agree on the big things. We'll figure out the rest later. And unfortunately, with the polarization I've seen happen really over the last 6 years, there are certain segments of the Republican Party that have become, hey, if you don't agree with everything that we say, you can get the hell out.
Well, I'm convinced that Trump will be the Republican nominee. I'm not convinced that Biden is going to be when the dust finally settles more in July when, I'm sorry, it'll be August because he's the incumbent. So the Republicans will have their national convention in July. The Democrats, because they currently hold the presidency, will have theirs in August. I think it'll be somebody other than Biden. But I want to go back to my original. Oh, I got to hold on. I got to take a break here. Stay there right there, Ken. I'm going to come right back to you in 60 seconds. And I want you to think about how Trump being at the top of the ticket would either help or hinder somebody running for state rep here in Connecticut or state senate in, let's say, a vulnerable or swing town. Stay right there. Coming right back.
Time is precious. Between work, the kids, and caring for an ailing mom, I have less and less free time. So the time I spend with mom, I want to be meaningful. That's why I leave the cooking, cleaning, and laundry to Euro American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with mom is about us, not chores.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cleaning, cooking, laundry, bathing, and errands to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4u.com.
No one ever likes calling their insurance company. It usually means there's a problem. And when there's a problem, you don't want to talk to a stranger. You want your agent, the agent who knows you. That's Michael Van Otterkirk and his staff at State Farm of Newington. State Farm has been the number one auto insurer in the U.S. every year since 1946. So when a problem arises, you'll be relieved to call State Farm of Newington, 860-666-1037. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm of Newington is there.
You're tuned in to the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network, Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason.
23 minutes after 7 o'clock on this Monday morning, our guest is the president of the Connecticut Young Republicans, Ken Langille, who joins us on a monthly basis. Okay, let's say there's a good candidate, a good Republican, and it's a town that's gone Republican, it's gone Democratic, it seesaws back and forth, maybe more Dem than Republican, but, you know, Republicans have a shot. But here's the caveat. Trump, as controversial and polarizing as you just mentioned, is at the top of the ticket. Does that help or does that hinder the candidate that's running for either state senate or state rep? And I want you to answer both of these. Would that prevent that person from running this time and maybe wait 2 years and run then? Or would you have them run this year anyhow?
Well, it certainly depends on the district. Now, if you're talking about somebody like Rob Sampson, not much of a concern. Conservative district, you know, somebody who is pretty safe, you know, not, I would even argue it probably helps him. Now, if you're somebody like my fellow young Republican Senator Ryan Fazio, it's a concern because you have seen the large push, especially among the Greenwich Democrats, of really going after the conservative brand. And even down there in terms of what's going on right now between the RTC and, you know, kind of the establishment Republicans, you're seeing a split there. And that split all goes back to one thing, and it all goes back to President Trump being at the top of the ballot simply because, you know, certain parts think, you know, oh, he's going to hurt me. You know, I should try to distinguish myself as much as I can. I should try to, you know, make sure the townspeople know me, make sure they know my, it's a, you know, vote local to quote your old.
All right, let me ask it to you this way, Ken. You served on the inner circle of two of my three campaigns. Okay. And please do me a favor. I'm going to preface this by stating, don't read between the lines here. I'm not running for state rep. Okay. I'm enjoying my position right here every morning. Getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning is not fun. But that aside, and I like working with Bejiji over here.
Hey, it's better than going to bed at 4 in the morning.
Well, that's right. That's something I used to when I was working weddings and events. Okay, so would you say, Gary, this is the year to get right back into Connecticut politics. Run for, it doesn't have to be state rep, run for state senate or run for state rep. Great opportunity for you. Would this be the year to do that, or would you say, wait two more years, Gare, and run on the gubernatorial year? That would be in 2 years.
If theoretically we were talking about you running for the ninth
senatorial district,
I would give you a better chance in 2 years than now. And let me tell you why. 2 years from now, we're going to have a governor's race. Going to be very interesting governor's race. We don't know what we're looking at on the Republican side right now.
Well, or the Democrat side, we don't.
Candidates out there.
Right.
This 24th cycle is going to be one of the most negative and intense cycles we have ever seen in our lifetime. And it's already ramped up, and it's already on its way there. And we're going to hit March on Friday. From Friday until Election Day, you are going to see it ramp up tenfold. It is going to be intense. So the good candidates you're going to see do well on the Republican side, and even, you know, on the Democrat side in Republican districts, are candidates who get out there, and you are one of these candidates, and introduce yourself to the people. You know, go one by one and, you know, talk to the townspeople, talk to the people in your district, distinguish yourself from national politics. Somebody like, you know, what Jerry Smith is doing, who's, you know, running for Senate against Chris Murphy. Somebody who's saying, hey, I'm going to try and get out there and meet everyone I can and show them, you know, hey, it's not all, you know, it's not if you're on Republican, you believe all this, and if you're on Democrat, you believe all this. We're human beings. We're all a little bit different, you know, yet the same. It's going to be about, can you distinguish yourself from the polarization of national politics?
I was impressed with Jerry Smith. When he was actually live in studio on Friday in the 9 o'clock hour, and he took us right to the end of the show, and we never had a chance to kind of digest that and talk that amongst, you know, the listeners of the show. I'd never met him before. Quite frankly, 2 weeks prior, I never even heard of the guy. But after meeting him and talking with him both on and off the air, I think he's smart. I think he's articulate. I think he's personable. I think he's got a shot because I'll always – anybody's got a shot, you know. But he's going to have a difficult time fundraising when he's not a known entity and he's going against a behemoth. And I even said that to him to his face on the air. What advice would you offer him? I only got about 40 seconds, but it's all yours, Ken.
I would
mainly focus on being a grassroots campaign.
Yeah,
get
I agree.
Out there, you're not going to be able to match Chris Murphy's money, unfortunately. He's got about $8.2 million on hand right now. You need to get out there, and you need to meet the people of Connecticut, and you need to introduce yourself and shake hands with as many of the voters in our state as you can and simply sway them and say, hey, while I'm running for a national position, I'm a Connecticut first guy.
Ken, do you see anybody else challenging Jerry really quick? Any other Republicans?
Nothing yet. No rumbles yet.
Okay.
You know, Robert Hyde is perennial.
John Flynn and Robert Hyde, right. But they run for everything every election cycle. Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you, my friend. Great job, my friend. I really appreciate it. Okay. We have got to take a break, and then we're going to come back to open phones. I see two lines open.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. Ronna McDaniel is
You're tuned in. Of Connecticut Radio Network, Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason.
Bom, 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 bom. You know, I'm sure you've noticed this. It's kind of hard not to. Our highways are absolutely crazy dangerous. Even on my way in this morning, I noticed a lot more traffic this morning than even last week. People weaving in and out. You got slow drivers in the far left lane, and you're not supposed to pass on the right, but you got no choice because you got somebody who's not even going the speed limit, let alone going way past the speed limit. They're not even going the speed limit, and they're in the left passing lane. So you have to go by them on the right. You got people, but then there are people that are just truly hauling ass. They're going 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. People driving stoned. They're joyriding in stolen cars. I mean, we see stories like the one on 95, right? Over in West Haven yesterday. Four killed in a wrong-way crash. I hate hearing stuff like that. I mean it. Just because, you know why? Because it's preventable. And by the way, I don't believe so much in coincidence. The weed that people smoke today is not the weed you smoked in the 60s and 70s. All right. So people, when they're saying, oh, there's no link between the legalization of recreational marijuana and all the uptick, the surge in wrong way driving. Well, they both started to occur at the same time. I don't know. I mean, you can figure it out and take it from there. Anyhow, good morning. It's Gary Byron, 8:11 here on this Monday morning. I'm delighted to have you with us this morning. Also with us this morning. Oh, I like this guy. Oh, I really do. He's going to, and I want to talk about this actually because he's the ranking member of the Transportation and Insurance and Real Estate Committee. He's also a member of the Planning and Development Committee and the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. He also ranks on, I think, the Bonding Subcommittee, if I remember correctly. Yeah, it's great to, I don't know when we had him back. I don't know when we have him on last. Anyhow, let's welcome back to the show State Senator Tony Wong. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. It's always great to talk to you.
It's always my pleasure. Tony, our roads are absolutely unsafe. I don't care if you're on 91, 84, 95, Route 8, Route 9, Route 2, whatever. I know. Look, it's an uphill battle. I know you're in the minority party, and there's only 12 of you in the Senate Republicans. I know you've been trying to do something about this, and maybe you can just update us a little bit.
I can. I think you said it best, Gary. What is so tragic about these deadly accidents are they're preventable. These are preventable tragedies that through awareness, through prevention, and through just common sense, we're going to save people a lot of grief, a lot of frustration and resentment and just missing loved ones. But, you know, The traffic accident that occurred in West Haven was just staggering. You got a pickup truck that hit a car straight on, jumped over the lane. It must have been going at such an incredible speed. Now, we just found out and identified it was a 26-year-old male, but there were other drivers that, you know, as you just talked about, the fear is you could do everything right and drive on the right side of the road and follow all the rules. But when something like this happens, anything can happen. And that's why for myself and you who are always on the road, and also for parents with new drivers, it really is a dangerous precedent that we're setting on the roads. And these are preventable, right, Gary? I think that's the thing. And we've seen an incredible increase because it seems to be a perfect trifecta. We've got impairment of alcohol, now the legalization of marijuana and substances. We've got distracted driving, more ubiquitous phones, and how it's built into every one of our car and that false sense of security that we have. And also what you said, the reckless, dangerous driving of people on the roads. I think, you know, when we were at COVID, when the roads were empty, people had a sense of freedom on the roads. But the problem was, now that COVID is moved past another stage, roads are full. People are still driving recklessly. So this is a perfect trifecta in regards to impairment, distraction from phones and other factors, and reckless driving on our roads that's causing these deadly, deadly accidents.
You know, but again, Democrats have tied the hands of police because, I mean, nothing is either, A, nothing is not getting enforced. It's really lawless out there. It's kind of like the Wild Wild West. B, a lot of police departments have been defunded. C, the recruitment is down because, quite frankly, nothing is advantageous for you to become a police officer. You know, I mean,
no doubt.
And D, they're retiring. They're taking early retirement.
They're struggling with regards to the removal of qualified immunity. The second part is staffing levels. Morale is a challenge, and there's not enough law enforcement on the roads to enforce it. The other critical factor is that a lot of my Democratic legislators supported the legalization of marijuana. And you talked about it. I do not believe in coincidences. The fact that we have a significant rise in regards to these traffic dangers and fatalities has to be tied to the legalization of marijuana, because we can propose a bill to talk about checking blood alcohol level, right? That is a controversial bill. But we have tests to be able to determine if somebody is alcohol impaired. You can't tell if someone is stoned or on pot, and there is no test. So, I mean, my frustration is, we talked about it during the legalization review process, that bill on legalizing marijuana never went through public safety committee, never went through the public health committee. It only went through the finance committee. So we talked about it.
Is
I would
right?
vehemently oppose against legalization from a public safety issue, because states that have legalized, like Colorado, California, have seen incredible rises in traffic.
They don't talk about that, though. They don't talk about it. And listen, I want to be clear here. If somebody smokes a joint, they like marijuana, I don't begrudge them. I'm not, you know, that's their business. I don't care. If you're home or you're at a party and you're not going to drive and you're smoking a dupe, here's the thing, though. It's much more potent today than it was in the 60s and 70s. Somebody back then could smoke a whole joint. Now, forget it. You can take a few drags and I think you're done, and you're either going to sleep like a baby or you're going to be way out there. It's so different now. And you used to hear all the time, well, it's a gateway drug. I guess that depends on your individual chemistry. For some people, it has been, and for others, it hasn't. So I'm not going to paint the whole thing with one brush, one stroke with a brush. But I can tell you this, I've seen it firsthand, where it went from somebody, you know, taking a couple of tokes a few times a month to then a couple of times a week to every day to multiple times every day. And now they become so dependent on it.
It's dependency, but also, like I said, Gary,
and it's affecting their relationships, work relationships,
any way
and friends.
Or form, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, or any other substance, you shouldn't be on the road. That's one. There's nothing to prevent you from having a good time, a drink or two at a party. Use an Uber. Don't get behind the wheel. And you can, and now that we legalize marijuana, you can have a smoke at home or in a social setting. But don't get behind the wheel. Impairment and the combination of distraction and density on our roads and the recklessness of other people on the roads, it's unfortunately the trifecta that's causing these kind of dangers. And these are preventable, right, Gary? I mean, I've talked to families that have lost loved ones to drunken driving from 20 years ago. They still miss them. Every holiday, every birthday, these people kind of carry the burden of that kind of tragedy, and these are preventable. So, but the reality is impairment, and people should not get behind the wheel.
Yeah, I but is there anything? Is it going to be addressed? I know it's a short session. I understand that, but is it going to be addressed at all in the Transportation Committee or?
We passed it last year in regards to wrong-way driving, creating better signals, and using technology such as, you know, if you go a wrong way, not only are you looking at the wrong-way signs, we're installing an electronic warning, sort of like a flashing light and, you know, sounds to alert people. The other thing that we looked at is doing a study to see how rumble strips could be implemented on a reverse basis. So if you're driving the right way, you won't hear the rumble strips, but if you're going the wrong way, you're going to get a jolt in the rumble strips. The third is really just kind of education, raising awareness. You can't teach common sense, Gary.
No, and you can't legislate it neither.
Too much, smoke too much, and then get behind a wheel. The problem is, what happens to these other drivers that are unknowing, that are part of this horrible tragedy?
No, that's
common sense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't legislate common sense neither.
But we also need to recognize, like you said, greater enforcement and recognition of the consequences of policies we make. You know, I still struggle the fact that we legalized marijuana in the state of Connecticut, and it didn't go through public safety in regards to evaluating and listening to law enforcement about the dangers of impaired driving through marijuana. We didn't talk to public health in regards to the cognitive impact on people and young people. No, we just looked at it from a monetary standpoint, and that, to me, was bad policy by the Democrats.
It's irresponsible, and I how does it not begin? That bill should have been introduced in public safety, then go to public health, and then end up in finance, revenue, and bonding. I don't know why it went to, you know, knowing the building as I do, and you know I do. I'm surprised. Hey, listen, stay right there. I got to take a quick 60-second break. I want to switch gears, though, when we come back. I want to talk a little bit about we had Comptroller Sean Scanlon in the studio last week. I want to go there with you more with State Senator Tony Wong right after this.
Time is precious. Between work, the kids, and caring for an ailing mom, I have less and less free time. So the time I spend with mom, I want to be meaningful. That's why I leave the cooking, cleaning, and laundry to Euro American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with mom is about us, not chores.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cleaning, cooking, laundry, bathing, and errands to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4u.com.
Easy Cater presents We've Got Your Back. Up Singers.
So I order food on Easy Cater for a meeting with a new client in Jackson.
Gotta feed clients in Jackson.
On my way to the airport, it hits me. The client is actually in Jacksonville.
Feed clients in Jacksonville.
So I call Easy Cater. Nina picks up right away.
Gotta fix it for you.
She called me right back and said, you're all set.
Nina fix a Jackson accident.
Jacksident? Easy Cater has your back with 24/7 support. Order at EasyCater.com and know.
We got your back.
You're tuned in to the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network, Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason.
23 minutes after 8 o'clock, our guest, State Senator Tony Wong. Tony, I know you're ranking on insurance. As I said prior to the break, our comptroller, Sean Scanlon, who I served in the House with, by the way, I always had a good relationship with him. He came in, I don't know what day it was, middle of last week, and he kind of made news on the show when he said he supports the association health plan legislation in order to lower health insurance costs. And we, you know, I mean, look, we applauded him for that. Talk about that issue.
You know, it's truly amazing. I did pay notice to that radio exchange that you had. I actually followed up and wrote a release and complimenting the controller, but more importantly, talking about the facts. The association health plan was an idea that looked at providing health care for small businesses, individuals that has to go on the exchange and not benefit from the economy scale of you know, employers, business, and benefits programs. It's the idea that allows affinity. So if you belong to the Rotary or you belong to the Chamber of Commerce and you're a single entity or a small business, you can qualify as a group rate to be able to get health benefits at a more economic rate. But what's remarkable is we have a hearing coming up this week, and the false premise and the narrative and the misleading information has already begun, because this takes the solution of a public-private dynamic and provides solutions to needs that are critical in healthcare insurance for small businesses and individuals. Now we're hearing that there's a outreach campaign that says this is going to take away your ability for coverage, pre-existing conditions. None of it could be further from the truth. The fact is, the advocates that are against Association Health Plan wants a government-run plan. And this solution of a health plan benefit plan that kind of creates an affinity program that allows business and insurers and individuals to be able to participate is another solution to reduce costs. But it doesn't include government-run programs. So for Controller Scanlon, who runs one of the largest health benefit programs in the country, and in fact in the state, for him to say that association health plans work should be something that matters greatly and counter the false narrative that's going about. I've gotten a bunch of emails just this morning for people to say, you're going to lose your pre-existing coverage, you're going to get exploited for loopholes. None of it could be further from the truth. And that's the frustration, is people want a government-run plan, and anything else that creates solutions is not acceptable.
I mean, health insurance is just so expensive. Do you actually think that this bill will end up on the governor's desk this year, or will make, or do you think public option loving lawmaker like, let's say, Matt Lesser is going to try to sink it again like he did in the past?
Well, what's important is the fact that it did pass the House, the Senate last year, and it didn't get called in one of the chambers. I don't know which one. And it had widespread support from Chamber of Commerce to realtors to a whole gamut, credit unions, small business owners, the microbrewers who could buy health insurance as a kind of an affinity group. The overwhelming response from the business market, CBIA, roundly supported.
Right. Yeah, no, I know they do, yeah.
It's remarkable how negative information, wrong information, that goes right to the heart of people's need for health care insurance is being kind of promulgated right now to undermine this bill. I'm telling you, as I'm talking to you, I'm reading four or five emails that says you're gonna get rid of pre-existing condition coverage, you're going to lose loopholes, and this is going to undermine health insurance. Nothing could be further from the truth. And the fact is, the Affordable Care Act will always protect, and the Association Health Plan has proposed is consistent with the obligations and the commitment to be able to provide pre-existing coverage.
What would it do to the insurance companies in Hartford, though?
I'm sorry?
What would it do to the insurance companies in Hartford?
Well, the insurance companies would lose their margins because they would have to have economy of scale, but also they would be able to use their expertise in administering these programs and create an economy of scale. One of the problems with these small markets is you're isolated in regards to individuals or small businesses. When you talk about Sikorsky Electric Boat, you know, when people who work there get their health benefits, even though if it's from Anthem or Aetna, they don't realize that Electric Boat and Sikorsky and Pratt Whitney self-insure. These companies self-insure and pay these insurance companies to administer the program, but they manage their risks and costs and economy of scale. The problem is with small businesses, they're on the fully insured marketplace. They don't have that economy of scale, so there's a challenge. Insurance companies are leaving the market. It's too high for small businesses and individuals. That is one of the programs that we're trying to resolve with the Association Health Plan. And the problem is the negative information of keeping business as usual only hurts one group, the payers of health insurance, right. And that's wrong.
I've only got 1 minute. I don't even know if I even have time to bring this up, but I know you serve on planning and development, and you guys really had an interesting public hearing about how e-books cost our libraries three times more than regular print books. I mean, in 30 seconds, Tony, I got to stick to that. What's up with that? Really quick.
It really is gouging. A institution that provides resources to every single community. And what people don't understand, one, it's access. This limits access. And number two, that excessive cost comes out of taxpayers' pockets because all of our local libraries are funded in part by local municipalities. So that margin that you're being gouged at to pay for electronic books comes at the expense of critical services like teenage services, youth program.
All right.
And also,
I got
taxpayers' pockets.
Great job. I appreciate it. Open phones are next.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. Supreme Court hears arguments today about social media restrictions.
A law signed by Governor Abbott of Texas banned social.
You're listening to Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason. Only on the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network.
They say there are two topics you should never discuss in social settings. If you're having a cocktail party, you know, your people are coming over, maybe you're having a cook. Well, you wouldn't have a cookout this time of year, at least not in the Northeast. Although most of the country, it's a little colder than normal. But let's say you were having a gathering. You know, the football Super Bowl was a couple of weeks ago, or maybe you're going to have some people over for some cocktails and dinner. You should never talk about what? Religion and politics. Not a conversation for the Thanksgiving table, right? with our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair, guess what we're going to do? We're going to break that rule. Well, we talk politics every morning. We're going to break that rule twofold. We're going to talk politics and we're going to talk, religion. Let's welcome back to this show. He is Pastor Emeritus over at Lifeway Church on the Berlin Turnpike in Newington. Joins us towards the end of every month. That would be today. Let's welcome back to the show Pastor Joel Rissinger. Pastor Joel, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gary. I'm laughing because you just described why I never get invited to any parties or barbecues.
You just discovered that now.
This is it, right here.
It's not your cologne, man. It's not, I promise you. You always smell good. You look good. You are good.
You're just marvelous, darling.
You look marvelous. You always look marvelous, darling. Marvelous with a capital M. Trump has a polarizing personality. I'm a supporter of his, and I'll admit that. Heck, I mean, his own people would admit that.
Yeah.
But let me ask you from a Christian perspective. Should Christians embrace Donald Trump or whoever the Democrat? I mean, I guess we have to say Biden because right now he's the incumbent. Yeah. So right, and I'm being and Trump is the presumptive candidate for the Republican Party. So I'm going to use Trump and I'm going to use Biden here.
Right.
Should Christians embrace the Joe Biden? Which candidate is more Christian-like?
Well, so I think you have to break down some terms. I think Christians should embrace everybody in terms of loving them, praying.
I mean, for voting.
We're even commanded to pray for our leaders, so we pray for Joe Biden.
No. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. But I think the reason I bring that up, Gary, is we have to distinguish between personalities, I would even say party, and policy or principle, biblical principle. I think Christians should vote and do everything they do based on biblical principle. So with that being said, if I look at the platform of each candidate and I say, what do they stand for? There is no question, and I've written about this. In fact, I have a new book I'm just publishing now where I talk about this a little bit. There's no question that a Christian would vote more in terms of where Donald Trump is and vote for him based on not his personality or that he's perfect in some way or that we ignore his faults, but based on policy. I mean, how could we possibly vote for the Biden administration based on their view of the sanctity of life, based on their view of Israel versus Iran, you know, supporting their enemies, based on socialism and communist thought, which is at its core atheistic and anti-Christian? I mean, there is no way that we can go to the voting booth and just, you know, plug our nose, close our eyes, and go, well, Joe Biden seems like a nicer old man, and Trump is mean, and he tweets nasty things, so I'm going to vote for you. We got to vote principle, not personality, and I would even argue not even party, per se. And I think if we do that, then, yeah, it's Trump.
Are enough people paying that close attention, as you just articulated?
Well, I would say no, which is how Joe Biden got elected in the first place. If you run the numbers, and again, I don't doubt fraud. I've seen enough evidence to believe there was fraud in the last election. Mm-hmm. But even putting that aside, you know, when you consider how many Christians there are in the United States, there should be no way that even with fraud that Joe Biden could have won. If they voted based on principle. But you're right, they don't pay attention. A lot of times they don't know really what a candidate stands for. Or maybe sometimes, and I hate to say this, this is kind of where my latest book is going to be focused, they're ignorant of what the Bible says about certain things. You know, the only time they hear the Bible many times is on Sunday, if it's read at all. And so they're not even sure and don't even understand necessarily what some of those principles are that would dictate that they avoid voting for someone like Biden, quite honestly. The president stands for a bunch of things that the scripture screams are sinful and evil and should be avoided. So it may be biblical ignorance, and it may be, you know, ignorance of the actual policies that some of these candidates support.
You mentioned the pro-abortion stance that Biden has. Well, actually, I shouldn't just say Biden. The whole Democrat Party has. But yet Trump just is making an announcement that he will support a 16-week abortion period. And even Ron DeSantis, a very conservative Republican governor of Florida, supported like a, I don't know, like a 4 week.
Six weeks.
6 weeks. A 6 week abortion period. And he's a very conservative candidate. Many people would even say be more conservative than Donald Trump, actually. But I believe that. But that being said, where does the Christian faith fall upon those two candidates then?
Yeah. So it's sad. I wasn't aware of this, what you mentioned about Donald Trump, in terms of the 6 week policy or whatever it is. But I have to say, I've noticed that, and this is part of why I'm an independent, no offense to any Republican friends out there or Democratic friends. I'm independent partially because what always seems to happen, Gary, is parties will be swayed based on public pressure. And that's what's been happening with regard to abortion and even other things like, you know, euthanasia or assisted suicide. There's a heavy push, you know, in favor of some of these things. And I've noticed Republicans arguing and pundits arguing, well, we've got to be softer on this. We can't take such a hard stance on abortion because we're not going to win, you know. And it's back to the old, you know, well, what's the lesser of two evils, right? You know, we may have to put up with this, but at least we'll win, and then we can do good, you know. And well, that we know the history of that, don't we? That doesn't work out so well. So I'm sad to hear that, and I certainly wouldn't support that. But you do have to look at all the policies side by side and say which ones are more biblical.
Right, because that's one issue.
Vote for.
But there's a lot of people who are one issue voters, and there's a myriad of issues, probably more issues now than in any time in recent political history. And that's only one, but it's a big one, particularly for women of both parties. Go ahead.
No, we can't be one-trick ponies and one-issue voters. We have to look at the whole package, that's for sure. Yeah, and when we do, I still would stand on the same thing that you're going to come down on. If the two choices are Biden versus Trump, you're going to come down on the side of Trump if you're just looking at biblical principle and policy and not, you know, who do I think is nicer, who do I like because he's got a bigger smile or some silly thing like that.
Do you find most voters being one-trick ponies, that one, and of that one trick, it's the abortion issue? Do you find that most voters that are uneducated in politics fall upon that line? Either they're either for abortion or pro-abortion or anti-abortion, and they let that decide their vote?
In my travels, Gary, I don't know. And you probably have your finger on the pulse better than I do, but you know, I'm traveling, working with churches and leaders from Ontario, Canada, to Central Florida, and you know, other countries. I don't see that. I see that they basically have, for the most part, no idea what candidates stand for, and nor do they care. In fact, there's a big push, and I'm very much opposed to this, where pastors and leaders are saying, well, we're not going to talk about these things because we don't want to be political, and we don't want to be accused of being racist, bigoted, homophobic, whatever. On the other hand, we don't want to necessarily be called woke, so we're just going to be silent.
Better not leave their home.
Silence is tacit approval, guys. Hate to say that, but it's true. I'm reading right now Bonhoeffer, the biography of the great Christian oppositional leader to Hitler during World War II. And he was not silent. He couldn't be silent. And he did wonderful things, had great fruit in his work and ministry because he refused to be silent, even in the face of Hitler's threats. So I think we have to be able to stand up for what's right. Do it with love, do it with grace, do it with best intentions, but not be silent on these issues because the church does not help anyone by being irrelevant. Jesus said she'd be a lighthouse on a hill, you know, a light not in a bushel basket, but a light that all would see. And that doesn't happen if we hide and we keep our mouths shut about some of these things.
We talk about there's more atheists and agnostics now than ever. It's a very secular nation. Opposed to maybe a generation or two ago where not only did people go to church every Sunday, but they got dressed up in their Sunday best and attended church and participated in church. And there was also an era where you went to the church and its volunteers to help you through any tough times that you're living through, you know, at the moment. If you lost your job, if you needed help paying bills or putting food on the table. The church was where you went to. It seems that the new pulpit is at government in the Capitol, whether it's the state capital or the nation's capital, where government has replaced the role of religion. So there, you acknowledge this. There's truth to this statement.
Oh, absolutely, Gary. And you know, we have a lot of people who would say they're spiritual, but not religious.
Yeah, I hear that all the
spiritual,
time.
Spiritual, but not Christian. And, of course, when
what
you ask them to define what that means, they look at you like a deer in the headlights. They really don't know what that means. They just know that they don't want to go to an organized church. I always say, come to ours. We're disorganized religion. You'll love it. But, you know, it's sad, but that is so true. We've looked to our government. And yet, what have they done for us? I mean, what is the history of that reliance? I love Ronald Reagan's old quote, you know, the scariest words you ever hear are, hi, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help, right? I mean,
it's
usually the opposite they provide, not help.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to revisit that. We certainly have to go back to our roots. The founders were men of faith, and they established a constitution that I think was taken in large part from principles in the book of Galatians in the New Testament. And we need to get back to that and stop rewriting history and saying, oh, no, it was a secular group, or there were maybe a couple deists in there, and that's about it. No, these were, in large part, Christian men who decided that they needed a system of governance that would allow for freedom and religious expression without government interference. And that's amen to that.
Joel, stay right there. I got to take a short break. All right. I got to ask you a question about universal health care. I know you've got may have a personal story about that when we come back. More with Pastor Joel Rissinger right after this.
Do you own a property with a telecommunication lease to AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile? Maybe it's ground space for a radio tower or a rooftop with antennas. You can get paid up to 17 years up front and use the money today. Selling your telecommunication leases just makes sense. Since there's been massive consolidation with now only three main providers, capital gains are the lowest ever. Find out more, get a site visit and on-the-spot cash offer at sellleases.net. That's sellleases.net.
Owning your own home should not be a difficult goal. Hi, it's Gary Byron, and with rents as high as they are right now, 2024 is the year to be owning. My friends at Putnam Agency Real Estate are committed to excellence and unlocking your home's value. For over 60 years, Putnam Agency Real Estate has sustained ever-evolving markets with extremely knowledgeable agents, providing unmatched standards and proven strategies. Call Putnam Agency Real Estate at 860-628-5691 and online at Putnam Agency Real Estate. State.com.
You're tuned in to the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network, Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason.
25 minutes after 9 o'clock, our guest, a pastor emeritus at Lifeway Church, Berlin Turnpike in Newington, Pastor Joel Risinger joins us the end of every month. All right, you and I once had a conversation a long time ago about universal
land far, far away.
That's right. About universal health care. I think you shared a story about your wife, Karen, or maybe it was her parents living up in Canada or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this at all? Is this vaguely familiar?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was maybe a couple of years ago, if not longer. Would you share that? I got about 4 minutes.
Okay.
Could you share that, whatever you can of that story again with us?
Sure.
Because there's a debate whether it's good or not. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, people say all the time, you know, and this was really popular during the Obama presidency because of his push towards national health care. They say, I want a Canadian system, free health care, free doctor visits, free this, free that. Well, you know, as the old saying goes, there ain't no free lunch. The tax rate in Canada is outrageous. They're paying about $7 a gallon for gas, and at least half that is tax because they're self-sufficient oil, Gary. So, you know, how do you just... They have more oil flowing than we do. How is it they're paying more, so much more for gas? Taxes are just outrageous, and the health care may be free, but you get what you pay for. In other words, you may travel for miles, hours even, to get certain types of care and then go on a waiting list for certain tests and so forth that we don't have here. We have many Canadians coming into the States for different services and even for pharmaceuticals, let alone for procedures. So, you know, I've shared that, you know, my mother-in-law was driving an hour and a half to go see her general practitioner, you know, one way. And this is in the hospital where they live in a city of, what, maybe 15,000 people, can't do many procedures. It's just basic, almost like triage care, and then they have to ship you a couple hours away if you have something serious. It's just, it's not free. You pay for it one way or the other, and certainly I think we don't need to go in that direction.
Is it true that you can't choose the doctor that you prefer because you're not paying for it? The government's paying for it, so therefore they dictate which doctor you're going to see.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that your choices are limited just because there aren't as many practicing as we might have here in the States, you know what I mean, because there's not as much money in it, because there are certain limitations. So obviously not as many doctors are available to you, whether that's a specific dictated choice or whether it's just the fact if you only got one in your neighborhood, that's who you get, or nobody, right? So I think we just need to back up a step, and we have to some degree, and I hope with a new president we can put this to rest once and for all and recognize that national health care, anything the government runs, is a mess. Let's face it. I've challenged people over the years, Gary, when you and I did radio together years ago, we used to do this, and I would say I challenge anyone to call in with an example of a local, state, or federal government program that would survive more than a month if it had to compete in the private sector. You know, they're a disaster. I mean, there's just waste and red tape and bureaucracy.
So we don't want the government managing our health. That is a mess, and certainly we can look at Canada as an example of that.
I mean, just look at DCF or the Department of Motor Vehicles, rest my case, right? You know.
Amen. I mean, I wrote a book years ago, Hell and – not a book. It was an article for a Christian magazine, a Christian humor magazine, and the article was called Hell and the DMV. And, you know, the basic point was if you doubt the existence of hell, spend an afternoon at the DMV.
All right, so when you're with us next month, I want to hear all about this new book that you're putting together. I can't wait to get a copy of it myself. So
sounds good.
We'll talk about that.
I'd be happy to send you a preview version, girl. I'll email you one.
Wow, look at that. That was a little hint that it didn't take him long to catch. Lifeway Church, Berlin Turnpike in Newington. Thank you, as always, Pastor Joel Rissinger. Until next month, my friend.
Sounds good. Blessings, Gary. Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
God bless you, brother. We're coming right back. Open phones. All our lines are open. I'm just waiting to hear from you.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. A member of the Air Force who's